Hi, this is Elle Elsie, writer, narrator, and producer of New York City After the Nuke, a love story, which is about what might happen if a nuclear bomb were to be dropped on New York. These are the first 10 minutes of episode 1.
The following audio drama is rated R for rockin'. You can be sure that everything you wanted to see when you're a teenager is here. Just tantalizingly out of reach if you're under 17 or 18 years old.
This is transmission 1 of 7, sent 5 years after the bomb was dropped on New York. My name is Elle, and this is what I saw. In the event of an emergency, having an action plan can increase the likelihood of your survival as well as that of your family. An action plan should include a meeting point, assigned responsibilities, and a checklist. This list should include food, clean water, toiletries, a first aid kit, and any required prescription medication. If the emergency is a chemical or nuclear attack, safe housing, such as a fallout shelter, should be made available. And remember, in the event of a catastrophe, having an action plan is far more likely to save your life than any government assistance. Page 10 of the Atomic Survival Guide. It was a nice, normal day. Sunny. I was procrastinating at work, staring out across the city, sprawling down beneath my 98th Street view on the east side of Manhattan. Thousands of people moving on the streets below, or hidden just beyond windows and walls. I watched the ones lucky enough to have escaped to the outside, bright dots of color moving across the streets as the sun blared down on them. I watched and wondered where they were headed. Envy crept up in me. I was stuck at work for the rest of the day. By the time I left, the sun would be setting. The day's heat would be receding, and it would feel like I was getting their leftovers. Then the emergency broadcast came without warning. They used the Emergency Alert System, or EAS. If you have the EAS, your time is pretty close to mine. Ballpark, anyway. My headphones were always in my ears, but not always turned on. Sometimes, I forgot to hit play and would accidentally find my thoughts. They buzzed into my ears with angry, urgent tones, smashing the silence in my head. I had been so engrossed in the view outside, the park and the reservoir glistening faintly in the warm summer afternoon, that I had jumped out of my seat and pulled the headphones out of my ears like they were hot. Jesus! I cursed at them, as if they'd apologize for ruining my daydream. Catastrophic nuclear event imminent. Estimated time to find shelter? 20 minutes. 20 minutes? I can do that, I thought, because I had planned for this. It feels macabre to admit it now, but I guess you could say I was a bit obsessed with the end of the world. My husband Don would probably say that I was pretty normal, at times even boring, but that I did have this one weird thing that occupied more of my time than it should have. Books about Chernobyl and North Korea littered our apartment. Vacations in Vegas were spent at the National Atomic Testing Museum instead of sipping drinks by the pool. To be honest, I think Don thought the whole thing was kind of cute, like I was a dog that kept carrying around the same beat-up toy she's had since puppyhood. You can keep Bubba if it makes you happy, and just don't pee in the apartment. Maybe we should have seen it coming. Tensions had been running high for so long. But we had the baby boomer's strange calm reassurances that this wasn't the first time things had been strained. Our parents were telling us that this had run its course before, and that it would run its course again, Because no one actually wants to use nuclear bombs. Because doing so is objectively crazy. And we listened because they were our parents. But the boomers' Cold War had been different from the new Cold War. Ours was too fast-paced, confusing, with too many players involved to keep track. Amidst the mess that was unfolding, it was too hard to keep track of what was happening where, a chaos no one seemed to quite grasp. All of it slipped through our fingers before we could point at anyone and denounce them a danger. But these things don't just happen out of the blue. Missiles, shooting through skies and clouds and distance with a specific target in mind. Someone thought that we deserved this. I didn't look up as the alert scrolled across my screen. Instead, I immediately texted Don to go ahead with the plan. Okay, he texted back just as quickly, and told me that he'd meet me at the elevators in the Hess building, the agreed-upon rendezvous point. I wanted to tell him to hurry, but I didn't. The only problem was that our go bag, the bag that had enough food to sustain us for 2 weeks, was still in our apartment, which was 3 blocks south of the hospital. I had assumed that we'd have more time to get underground. But I would only need 3 minutes to get to the apartment and 3 minutes to get back. It would be okay. It would all be okay, I thought then. I stood up and noticed my colleagues around me. Some of them looked too stunned to move. They just stood by their lab benches, swaying slightly and staring at their phones like maybe it was a joke. Their rational minds did not understand what had just happened. The woman at the desk behind me sat rubbing her jaw with her palm like it was sore, like she'd been sucker punched. As I stood, I touched her shoulder and she jolted. "Time to go," I said calmly, but she just stared at me blankly. Other people were absolutely losing their shit. The grad student was grabbing everything on his desk like it might come in handy later. Phone charger, post-its, a plethora of pens, scotch tape, all dumped into his bag in one big sweep. Then he looked around his desk for other things he might need. The two women with children had already bolted, leaving their laptops still open on their desks. I grabbed the clunky 1950-style Geiger counter off my lab bench and followed out after them. The elevator heading downstairs to the main lobby was stifling. We all ignored the 2,000-pound warning on the inspection sign and packed in like sardines being chased by sharks. No one spoke. We stood with solemn expressions, but our eyes were darting all over the place. When we arrived in the lobby, I zigzagged through the sea of people, shoving aside backs and chests clad in scrubs and summer dresses. The back alley between the buildings was empty, and I started sprinting. The Geiger was awkward to hold, and I let it bounce against my upper thigh as I ran towards Madison Avenue. The Geiger got looks, panicked looks. The catastrophic, before the word event, was starting to settle into people's minds as I carried proof through the street. We had 16 minutes to get to shelter by the time I crossed Madison Avenue. The street was packed with cars, gridlocked from sidewalk to sidewalk, and every one of them was leaning on the horn.
"Why don't we just leave the city?"
Don had asked me once when I told him about my emergency plan. For some reason, panic propels people to get into their cars and to just go without thinking where to. We'd get stuck. I shifted on my couch cushion. First, we'd get stuck because there would be too many cars and only one way out. And then, worst case scenario, the electrical pulse of an atomic explosion would kill the ignition. Our car would turn off and then never turn on again. The surrounding cars would have boxed us in by then, because everyone else is thinking the same, and we'd get stuck in the car. And then we'd probably catch on fire, because, like, everything is on fire, because the bomb releases a massive amount of heat, and the whole city would probably go up in flames. So, driving away might not be the best plan. Don had rolled his eyes at me.
I propose a romantic end-of-the-world road trip, and you bring up fire and brimstone.
At the time, I had laughed. We had been sitting in our dimly lit living room, and were drinking Earl Grey tea and lazily eating crackers with peanut butter. My intrigue with the end of the world was just part of me being a worrier. I never thought any of it would actually happen. People who build bunkers in their backyards don't actually want to use them, and I didn't actually think the world would end.